Hello and welcome to Money Control. This is Priyanka Sahai and you are tuned into Setting Sail, our weekly podcast that dives through the changing landscape of the entrepreneurship ecosystem and the challenges within. Today we have with us Mukund Jha, co-founder and the techie behind the brilliant user interface of hyperlocal delivery startup Dunzo. Hi Mukund, thank you so much for taking time out for us.
Hi Priyanka, thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Mukund, we were just talking about the user interface that the company has built. Your company has actually managed to become, let me say, the surf of the detergent industry, right? In Bangalore, Dunzo is a very commonly used word. People say that if you have to get something, just Dunzo it. Tell me more about the journey to create an app like this. What does it take to build a user interface like Dunzo?
Right. So, I think Dunzo is becoming a verb every day more and more. And that's something that is a moment of pride for us. So it's been a long journey for us. When we started, we were actually on WhatsApp with a very simple idea that, like, hey, let people just message us whatever they want to get done. And like, can we get it done for them? Right. An initial sort of year and a half was largely around building behind the scenes while we ran completely on WhatsApp. We, in fact, had our first driver app built on iPhones because we had more iOS engineers than Android engineers, and we actually bought a lot of phones and gave it to all the drivers. And we never actually got those phones back, but it was sort of a good learning experience for us to build the entire technology stack while completely running on WhatsApp, which sort of helped us scale and understand the business and the operations nitty-gritty really well. And since then, we have sort of come up a long way. We have sort of moved away from the regular chat flow that we had in the beginning, where people could just message us, and then like a mix of AI and human operators will actually understand the request and then coordinate with partners to sort of get your task done. Right? Today, we are sort of more of a storefront marketplace kind of a interface where people can actually browse and figure out what is available in their local neighborhood and sort of make purchases. And the reason we sort of shifted to sort of this kind of interface is what we realized is that people really didn't care too much about chatting, right? Like initially, like it felt like people cared, but the only thing that they wanted was to get their things done, right? And we are sort of in the business of just taking friction out from every transaction that's happening in the local sort of environment, right? And that's what we are striving for. Like, how do we reduce the friction between a consumer and a merchant and a partner to make the transactions as smooth as possible, right? And a lot of things that goes behind the scene, like every time you place an order, like we sort of try to figure out who are the available partners nearby, how do we find you the best partner who can run this task based on the complexity of the task, based on the stores which are open, what kind of items are available there. It's a fairly complex sort of system, a beast that sits behind, which tries to make sure that everything that runs in the real world happens in a way which is sort of efficient and runs in a way which is which sort of hides the complexity behind the scene, right? So it's a three-sided marketplace. So today there's a merchant who is actually fulfilling the order. There's a delivery partner who's actually delivering the order, and a consumer who's placing the order. And like, we have three sides of this platform built out so that the transactions can run smoothly. And from day one, we have actually built our platform with a very generic use case in mind, like that we can run multiple transactions, whether it's like buying food or groceries or medicine. And each of these categories have their own nuances and complexity, right? And a lot of those things are modeled into our sort of algorithms on how do we tackle each of these transactions differently, right? And a lot of our focus now has gone into sort of how do we run really optimized and efficient networks so that the driver utilization on the ground is high and we are able to sort of bring down the pricing so that a lot of people can actually afford to use Dunzo. And a lot of that is basically in the complexity of like, how do you sort of track real time in the partners in real time? How do you sort of optimize around which is the best partner to run what kind of task, whether it's a complex task or an easy task? How do you sort of build in-store efficiency so that the packets are ready and the defects are low so that like whatever people are seeing in the stores, store pages are able to find the exact item in the store as well. And we also offer this flow where people can actually just choose a store of their own liking. And a delivery partner will go there and purchase on their behalf and bring it to them. Right, so there's a lot of complexity that goes behind into like surfacing these stores, like how do we build search, how do we sort of build pricing engines. It's a fairly complex beast behind the scene.
Tell me how much time it takes for a bunch of techies to build a startup, or I would say build a platform like this, which manages to capture the user time, which manages to capture the user imagination accurately.
We are still sort of solving the problem. So I wouldn't say that we have solved this problem completely, right? I think any good startup takes around 2 to 4 years for it to sort of reach a level where they understand the market and their users really well. And I think that's sort of essence in the beginning, right? How do you really understand your consumers and their need and make sure that you're building for the right use case for them, right? When we started, we were actually doing everything under the sun, right? From servicing a car to getting you a plumber. And then slowly we started realizing that the core need that we were trying to solve was getting things from point A to point B, right? And sort of that was our strength in terms of building this logistics network, right? And that's where we focused on, right? And so it's hard to say that whether it takes people like 6 months or a year or 5 years. It also depends on how big your team is. But I think in general, it's constantly evolving. It's very dynamic, sort of the landscape, especially today, right? Where everything is moving so fast. Like digital payments when we started was like very low penetration, right? In fact, like in the beginning, we had no cash on delivery, right? And then demonetization happened and then sort of digital payments took off. So I think the landscape is changing really quickly and teams need to sort of evolve and adapt to that. So I think your consumer, their needs, the market itself is pretty evolving pretty fast. And so I don't think the problem is ever sort of done, right? And you always have the next level to sort of reach out to the next set of users to do a better job, right? So like hard questions to say whether it can be quantified in terms of time.
Right. Interesting. You know, you spend a good amount of time at Google. So I'm sure a lot of learnings would have come handy. Why don't you tell a little bit about that? How was your experience at Google and what all did you learn? Could you actually implement in your startup?
So when I was at Google, I was actually working on the search ranking team. And so basically we would sort of write algorithms to figure out what results should show up in the top 10 links in the Google homepage. But actually, I had to do a lot of unlearning when I moved out because a lot of things in Google you can take for granted. For example, resources, like you can spin up thousands of machines without worrying about cost or infrastructure and things like that. There were a lot of things that were already set, and Google also internally had different ways of doing things, which were sort of conducive to their scale, right? For example, you could just write to a database without thinking about whether it's going to scale or not, right? And once you sort of move out, you sort of realize that all of this things that existed in Google, which made things easier for you, don't exist today in the external world. So you have to sort of scramble and figure out how to do things, right? And so I think there was a lot of unlearning to be done when I left Google, right? Like, and sort of restart and figure out how to sort of build like great products, right? I think things that sort of stayed with me with Google, I think like generally people there think big, right? I think everybody has a tendency to think really big and like scale. So I think that was one of the things that stayed with me, where like, how do we think we are solving a big problem? How do we sort of take on any challenging problem and sort of try to find a solution to that, right? I think second thing that stayed with me was, especially the teams I was working with, was very sort of customer focused and like I would say very focused on doing the right thing for the customers, right? I think that is also something that sort of stayed with me. And I think a lot of what we have built at Dunzo today also reflects that in terms of our customer sort of centricity and empathy that we have today, right? And in terms of sort of technology, like I think things that really sort of helped was like fundamentally way of thinking of approaching a problem, right? How do you sort of build, test, iterate, right? I think that was one of the things that we used to do a lot in the search ranking team, is because a lot of your experiments will not work. Like you'll try like 10, 15 experiments and then one of them will give you a good result. So I think that experimentation mindset sort of got created when I was with Google, where we knew that, okay, like, you know, not every experiment is going to work. And the sort of only way to make quick progress is to sort of not get too attached to any experiment and make sure that you're learning from those experiments and iterating enough.
Mukund, this is not your only startup that you are running, and the other two companies that you founded, I think, are called Wisdomly and Habit. Right. Now, what are these companies doing currently, and which one is the closest to you in terms of a product? I know it's a difficult question, but I'm answering that.
Right. So the other two are shut down, so I'm not actively sort of working on them. Wisdomly was my first startup where we were trying to solve group education. So when we started, there was this whole movement around MOOCs where Udacity and Coursera and other people were building something. And then at the other end, there was like personal one-on-one training, and we were trying to build a group class. And that was my first startup. I was really sort of optimistic about things working out. And we raised some money and then sort of pivoted into becoming this online events tool because our investors thought that, okay, that is the next big thing. And then like 6 months later, we realized, oh, this is not what we wanted to do. We wanted to change the world of education. And like here we are building an enterprise software for like holding events, which would have been a great software today, right? Like given pandemic and stuff. But that's when we sort of shut it down, returned the money. And the second one was around habit formation. So I actually took a little bit of break in the middle and like traveled around the world, went to South America, Europe. At that time, I was very focused on building like my own personal habits, like exercising, meditation, stuff like that. And figured that it was really difficult and like somehow like machine and like AI should be able to help, you know, stay on track. And that's where we started building this software, which can actually learn from your habits and sort of give you sort of cues to build that. And sort of we launched it to a small set of people. It was working really well, but at the same time I moved back to India. So wasn't able to sort of really sort of continue working with the team, and we ended up selling that startup. And I think like for me, like Dunzo personally has been the best phase of my life, right? I think like I've learned so much, I've achieved so much here, and we are able to solve a real problem, right? I think for most entrepreneurs, I think it takes them a couple of iterations to really figure out what they are sort of built to build, right? What they are sort of, and I think like with Dunzo, I've found that where this is the right mission, where I'm aligned, where we are solving a really big problem. We are sort of helping India in a really large way, like building jobs for a lot of people, connecting local economies with consumers, right? So I think in terms of fulfilling, I feel like Dunzo is sort of the best so far.
Dunzo is the answer wherein you're getting answers to all your questions.
Yes.
Now coming back to, you know, what Dunzo has seen in the recent past, I think there's been some reports of data hacking which happened. And yes. Dunzo, of course, has not been the only company. I mean, this is something which has happened to multiple startups and tech firms in the past. Why don't you first give us a clarity on what exactly happened? And secondly, talk about when such a hack happens, what sort of measures have been put in place technologically by Dunzo to ensure that the least amount of damage happens to the customers who are using the app?
Somewhere in June 2020, we actually had an attack where like some of our databases got breached, right? And we haven't shared too much details about it in public, so like I'm not gonna talk about it right now. Like we are planning to do a larger blog post soon, but essentially like there were some vulnerabilities which an outside attacker was able to exploit and sort of get into our systems and copy some data, right? And since then, we have sort of really, really changed our focus as a company and as an engineering team to really focus on strengthening our security aspects. There have been multiple sort of checks put in place. We have sort of consulted with multiple external security firms to come in and help us audit our systems and find if there are any vulnerabilities that are still pending, and sort of fix anything that we have found so far. And like we are now in a position where everything is airtight, right? But it's a continuous thing. Like security is something that you can't take for granted. And I think we made that mistake, where we sort of did not prioritize it well in our sort of priorities, right? And left some things which were sort of open and sort of that led to an exploit, right? But now we are sort of really focused and in our OKRs everywhere, security is our number one agenda, where we want to ensure that incidents like this never happens again. I think in general, like I feel now with really like the online things are booming, I think these cyber attacks and these things are going to get even more common. And I think startups need to really prepare for that. I think startups in general, especially in India, are very underprepared, right? In fact, I'm working with a few of the security consultants to sort of really push boundary of security across different startups in India, right? So we're going to be coming up with some plans soon where we'll offer free advice and free sort of audits and things like that, tools so that like people can actually really, because most startups are not resourced well to sort of deal with these kind of things, right? And there are some general good practices that people are following that they're largely secure. Right, so we're gonna be sort of investing a little bit in that so that overall ecosystem also improves, right? But yeah, it's a scary thing, right, when it happens to you. And we have been sort of upfront about it from the beginning. We reached out to all our customers and sort of detailed out what happened, right? And it was an unfortunate instance, but we are now like really prepared to make sure that everything is on track. Everything now is sort of encrypted. and secured, and like that's sort of our number one OKR internally to make sure that like security stays a focus area for us. And we are being proactive about it, not reactive, so that like we are sort of putting in measures where there is threat monitoring, there are firewalls to ensure that anything that goes out or wrong, like we're able to detect and prevent it even before anything happens. Right, but I think it's a growing concern area for like all of us in sort of Indian startup ecosystem, right? And like how do we really sort of make sure that each company is prepared and is looking with security, right?
So broadly, high time stringent action needs to be taken. Maybe collectively you can set up a committee or a watchdog. Try and figure out what is the best way possible to ensure and, keep boundaries against all these activities.
Yes. So I'm working with a couple of people. We're going to be releasing something really soon where like a lot of it is also information asymmetry because a lot of people don't understand really. In fact, like over the last 3 months, like I've really gained a lot of things, knowledge about security world, which I did not know before. So I think there's a lot of information disparity also, which exists where a lot of people don't really understand what are certain aspects, what are some common pitfalls and small number of things that people can do to really make things secure. So I think that's something that is needed.
Mukund, could you take us through what amount of capital is Dunzo sitting right now? I believe the last you announced a funding was from Altidia Capital. That was a debt round. And before that, I think sometimes last year you announced a $45 million institutional round of funding. So overall, given the current scenario, what is the money that you're sitting on? And given that you're in a hyper-local domain, the cash burn has to be high. So of the total money you've raised, how much is left in the bank? And what are your plans to, raise another round of funding?
Right, so I can't really comment on the exact cash that we have, but we are always sort of raising funds. Like we just recently concluded a funding round, is in the news, and probably if not, then probably will be out very soon. But yeah, it's a business which is sort of cash hungry and you need to sort of keep raising capital to ensure that you're well capitalized and because you're also in the phase of market building, right? And I think market building takes a little bit of capital, especially in a large domain like ours, right? Having said that, especially after COVID, we have been seeing sort of good unit economics pick up. And I think one of our focus areas have shifted to sort of really focus on profitability, right, across the company, right? We think we can sort of get to profitability in about next 2 to 2.5 years, right? Because of COVID, we're trending sort of unit economics positive in a lot of areas and are investing in growth in some of those areas. But in general, even without COVID, we have a very sort of strong plan to get to profitability over the next 2 years, right? And that's what we are focused on right now. So I don't think we're going to require too much capital to get to profitability, right? Maybe another $100 million is what we are thinking around. But again, it is also dependent on the dynamics and the markets and stuff like that. So we are always on our toes to raise the next round. When we finish one round, we sort of start preparing for the next round. It's a continuous process for companies like ours.
Tell us a little bit more about the recent round that you had with Google and the Lightthron Fund. Google, of course, is your existing investor. I think one of the first few companies that Google invested in the startups, Indian startups, was Dunzo. So tell us a little bit about, how Google invests and what was that round like? I think it was 28 million. So how much of that did come from Google?
So I can't really sort of comment on those things right now. Right? I mean, what I can tell you is Google has been a great partner in the journey throughout. They were one of the lead investors in 2016. And then since then, they've been a great partner with us. And we've been working very closely, collaborating with them on a lot of various aspects to sort of really improve our consumers' experience. And I think most of the information is sort of in public is what we would want to disclose at this point.
Now, quickly, just to summarize this and to conclude this, tell me what is the key to consumer acquisition for Dunzo?
That's a good question. I think key to consumer experience is really providing them with a great experience and serving a need, a true need for a consumer, right? I think fundamentally, that's what it boils down to. And once you get that word of mouth going, right, where people are actually, once you serve their needs really well, once they are having a good experience, they're going to talk about it and they're going to sort of spread the word. And that's how you sort of get more and more consumers. In fact, for the first 2.5 years of our, maybe 3 years of our existence, we did zero marketing. and grew purely organically. And after that, we started investing in marketing and performance marketing and ads a little bit more. But I think like that's been our core, right? Like where we are really, really focused on providing really great experience for our consumers, making sure that every order that runs runs perfectly on the platform. And you sort of make users talk about it. You make sure that you know, they come back to the platform and they sort of invite more and more friends, right? And I think once you have this engine running, like which basically means that your core product is working, right? On top of that, then you can augment with, you know, other things which sort of, you know, like help you accelerate some of this growth. For example, a referral program or sort of, you know, like how you sort of build Facebook ads and stuff like that, right? But I think in the core essence of it is really truly how your consumer feels about your product, and are you serving a real need for them that they need to keep
whether coming. Or not your service is actually impacting the requirement of a consumer, rightly. Also, one quick last question, Mukund. What is the expansion plans for Dunzo? I mean, you've raised multiple round of fundings in the recent past, and given that even still, your services are quite dedicated to the southern part of the country. You've expanded to Delhi NCR, but it's not as aggressive as I would say in places like Bangalore and all. So what is the current expansion plans, both in terms of services that you offer as well as in terms of geography?
So currently we are in 8 cities, and like we think Dunzo is sort of a product which should exist in top 20, 30 cities in India. Right. And for this year, we are really focused on going deeper into the cities that we are already present in. So like you'll see a lot of plans of expansion in Mumbai, in Delhi, in Gurgaon. Right. And one of the strategies that we are using to sort of really expand into these cities is, again, like coming back to customer experience. Right. This is a mistake that we have made in the past where we have really gone out to sort of acquire a lot of users without really fixing our experience. And then people transact once or twice for an offer or something, and then they sort of churn out. Right. And what we have sort of gone back and realized that, like, you know, you really need to get your experience at a great level before you sort of start expanding. So that's what we are focused on, is like getting our experience right in the new geos that we are launching, and then sort of aggressively expanding to new geos in adjacent areas. Right. So that consumers who are sort of experiencing for the first time, they get a great experience and they keep coming back. So our plans for this year is to sort of continue like going deeper into cities that we are in. Like there is a lot of growth potential in all the cities that we are right now in. And so we want to continue sort of going deeper there. Right. Next year, we'll start opening a few more cities, Calcutta, Chandigarh. Some of those cities might start opening up. In terms of categories, there are a lot of interesting things sort of on the horizon, right? Like we have been experimenting with phone launches. We've been experimenting with clothes, right? So we are looking actively at what are the other categories that we can expand to in commerce domain, right? And some of the new categories will be launched over the next year. But again, we are continuously sort of focusing again on our core aspects, right? Like how do we make sure that our consumable orders, which is essentially groceries, fruits and vegetable, meat, medicine, those are running perfectly. How does our B2B and B2C pickup and drop orders run really well? How does bike taxi experience run really well? We are continuously focusing on making sure that those core experiences are a top notch before we sort of really get into the expansion mode. So next year is something which we are targeting, where we'll sort of start aggressively expanding into different cities and different categories. This year we are sort of really focused on getting the existing things really working, going deeper into the city that we're already in.
It's almost barely like just a couple of months left for the year to end, and probably by the beginning of the year we'll possibly get to hear some more expansion in terms of services from you.
Yes, absolutely.
All right. Well, on that note, Mukund, I would really like to thank you for taking time out for us.
All right. Thank you, Priyanka. Really nice talking to you.
So that's all that you have for this episode of Setting Sail. Meanwhile, if you have any comments or queries, you can write down to us. Our email is mcpodcast@nw18.com. You can also follow us on Twitter with our user IDs @moneycontrolcom and @PriyankaSahai. Till then, for more news, views and updates, stay logged on to moneycontrol.com.